Thank you for joining me. I'm Julie Vecchio, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at FisheriesPod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or support the podcast on patreon.com/fisheriespodcast. If you're interested in showing off your support for the show or even just a favorite fish species, come check out our merch over at the Fisheries Podcast fan shop hosted by Teespring, where you can find t-shirts, hats, stickers, and more. Look for the link in the show description. This week, my guest is Kelly Bassbinder. Kelly just defended her PhD at the College of Marine Science at the University of South Florida in the Fisheries Ecosystem Ecology Lab. This makes her almost a doctor. Her dissertation was titled Modeling Early Life, Ontogenetic Growth and Behavior Affects Population Connectivity in the Gulf of Mexico Marine Fish. And it explores a lot of interconnected ideas that are rarely put together. She is a native of St. Petersburg, Florida, where she was a camper at the Oceanography Camp for Girls just before starting high school. She got her bachelor's degree at Florida State University in Biological Sciences, where she did an undergraduate thesis on sponge regeneration in Belize and in the Florida Keys. Her next move is to Santa Cruz, California, where she'll be a postdoc and continue to apply ecosystem models to fisheries questions. Kelly is also a friend of mine, and I'm really excited to let her share some of her dissertation work and her future plans with you. Welcome to the podcast, Kelly.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get to talk to you a little bit on the show. I think your dissertation work has been just so cool and so innovative and integrative, and I think people are going to really like hearing about it.
Awesome. I'm excited to share.
So you actually grew up in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is where we are right now. It's almost an island with Tampa Bay on one side and the Gulf of Mexico on the other. Was there a defining moment growing up when you knew that you wanted to study the ocean?
Yes, there definitely was. My middle school science teacher at Southside Fundamental here in St. Pete actually participated in a project where a touch tank was set up in her classroom. And she saw that I was always really excited to see the tank every time we had class. So she recommended that I apply to a local program called Oceanography Camp for Girls. And I can still remember Dr. Angie Lodge, one of the OCG, Oceanography Camp for Girls, I'm going to abbreviate as OCG, directors. She came and interviewed me at my middle school in our guidance counselor's office, and I was like bouncing off the walls with excitement. And I can still remember how happy I was when she called me back and told me that I got into the camp. And basically right from the beginning of OCG, I was hooked. We went out on research vessels, and I remember very specific memory of one day we were trawling an area of Tampa Bay to survey some demersal fish, and we dumped the fish into buckets when we got them back on board so that we could learn how to hold a fish and measure a fish. And I remember standing on the deck with this flopping fish in my hand and thinking, oh man, I want my job to be this. So I knew like from that moment when we got all the fish on board that I wanted to do marine research. And then Dr. Lodge and Dr. Greeley, the two co-directors of OCG, have really been big mentors to me since that day. And they helped me kind of like congeal it down to what I actually wanted to do. But I just remember holding the fish and looking at it flopping around and being like, this is it. This is what I want.
Wow. That's so exciting that you really, that really solidified things for you at the Oceanography Camp for Girls. Can you tell me, you said that during the program, you went out on research vessels and did trawling for fish. What else happens at the Oceanography Camp for Girls?
Yeah, so OCG, Oceanography Camp for Girls, is a program for girls that are between 8th and 9th grade in the Pinellas, Tampa Bay area. You get to do a variety of different activities. The idea of it is basically to give you an idea of like what a day in the life of a scientist would look like in all different jobs in marine science. And so it was started to essentially like show teenage girls that they could be scientists and they like had the capabilities to become a scientist. And so there's a lot, has such a wide variety of activities. We do field trips to local field sites such as Caladese Island and Fort DeSoto, so we can look at some of the local fish species as well as some of the local geology and some of the physics in the water when we're at those sites, as well as nutrient chemistry. So those are really fun. And then we also do shell key, so that we learn about different bivalves and different shells, and each of the field trips has a little bit of a different focus, but the cool thing is that we take the same measurements on all three of the main field trips, on the cruise, at Shell Key, and at Fort DeSoto, and so then you can kind of compare the chemistry of like different areas, as well as what fish you would find at a beach versus out on a vessel in deeper water, and so that's kind of cool because you get to see the differences in some of the different areas, as well as like what lives there and what does the water look like there. But then we also do lab days where graduate students at USF College of Marine Science design labs based on their research. And so we actually got to go into their labs with them and do like a tiny piece of something similar to what they do for their research. And so that was really fun because you get to see the fieldwork side of things, but then you also get to see the lab work and analytical side of things. And so that's really, I really enjoyed that as well. And one of my favorite days at OSCG is Fish Banks. And that's essentially a game based on fisheries population dynamics. And everyone's playing as a team, as a fishery. You essentially have to make decisions about where you're going to fish and what population metrics you're going to try to maximize, or if you're going to try to maximize a different sector like economics. It's kind of like giant fish monopoly is what it feels like, but by the end of it, you start to get an idea of why fisheries are a lot more complicated than you might think. And so it's a really fun game, and we got really competitive. And even when we play it as a staff, to tricks now I go back as a science mentor, and when we play it as a staff, during staff training, it's so competitive during staff training, even though we all are fishery scientists. And so we know what's going on, and it's still like a really...
I got to play it once. I thought it was a lot of fun. And it really does show in a very vivid way, like you said, why fisheries are so incredibly complicated. That's definitely one of my areas where I would love to do more public outreach and really just like get people's hands involved in, you know, all the different things that have to go into making fisheries decisions, because people just don't think about that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many moving parts, and it's really eye-opening to go through an experience like that. So
yeah, it puts you in someone else's shoes for a little while. And you also get to see how different people make decisions based on different information. And once you realize just how much is available and how much is not available for making those decisions, it kind of widens the picture a little bit into just how many different moving parts there are at any one time.
We both live in St. Petersburg now, and I didn't grow up here. I grew up kind of in the Midwest, and I am currently raising a child in the way that I probably dream that I had been raised, like constantly at the beach and on the water and outside all year round. Is that how you were as a kid?
Yes, 100%. My dad actually used to take us fishing every Saturday, starting from when we were like two. I have a younger sister, and so when she got older than a baby, we took her as well. And he would park our little strollers up next to this dock at a nearby boat ramp. So we would drive down to a neighborhood near the water, and we would go to the boat ramp there, and he would pull our strollers up to the little railing and hand us this like tiny fishing pole, and we would not catch anything, of course. But then when we got a little bit older, like elementary school, we started to catch pinfish, and I remember thinking that was so cool, even though they were like very tiny. We would reel them in, and I would be like, I did this. I got this.
My son just went fishing for the first time a couple weeks ago. And first of all, my husband brought home a fishing rod, and they spent, I don't know, at least an hour just practicing reeling it in with like a little sponge on the end of it, and just like reeling it across the living room over and over and over. He loved it. And then they went fishing off of somebody's dock that we know. And they got a sheep's head, and he was like so excited about getting the sheep's head.
Oh my gosh, that's so fun. And reeling it in is the best part. So like, even if there's nothing there, when you reel it in, that was the most fun, I thought, when I was a kid. Even my church youth group, when I was in middle school and high school, we would go to weekly beach days in the summer. And I remember I would always like run around pointing at things, telling my friends like how to identify the different shells and fish, and like being a nerd basically, but it was very fun. And so yeah, all my friends in middle school could tell you all the shell differences, because nice, that's what I would do whenever we went to the beach.
I went to pick him up from preschool the other day, and he said to one of his newer teachers, he's like, "That's my mom. She's a marine biologist," or something. And the teacher was like, "Oh, really? Well, I guess I should have known that, since you always talk about marine biology."
That's funny. Yay, starting it right.
I was like, "Well, yeah, we do. We talk about science all the time in our house." So in undergrad, you went to Florida State, and you were part of a lab that studies sponges. Were you particularly interested in sponges, or was this just a way to get some more like research experience?
So I was interested in reef ecology, mostly because I thought that would be really fun to do. And coral reefs were something that piqued my interest. They're colorful, there's lots of things swimming around on them. And so I remember being kind of intrigued by reefs, and also because I have always lived in a pretty tropical place. So I was interested in reef ecology, and I was also in a program called the Women in Math, Science, and Engineering, or WIMSE, program at FSU, which paid research assistant positions. So you could work in any, and it wasn't discipline specific, so you could work in any lab on campus as long as the advisor accepted you, but you would be paid by WIMSE to do a research assistant.
Wow, that's really neat. I didn't know about that program. Cool. That's nice.
Yeah, and I knew I would need a job in undergrad. That was always part of my plan, was to work part-time through college. And so it was a cool opportunity, because then that job could be working in a lab. So that was really exciting. And so I started looking at all the different labs on campus, and I found one that was sponge ecology. And I didn't know that much about marine sponges, but I knew they lived on reefs, and I thought reef ecology was interesting. So I started reading papers from that lab, and then ended up applying with them and interviewing with them. And I got the job during my freshman year and ended up working there all 4 years. So it was really fun. And it was a really cool experience. My undergrad advisor put me on a lot of projects, and I ended up getting to work on some of them from start all the way to finish. So it was a cool experience to learn how to come up with what a realistic question is in science.
That's and so plan important.
Find the answer for that, because we would have a lot of ideas, but then we would have to come up with something we could actually answer. And one of my lab mates, her name is Katie, and I ended up running a couple of the projects in the lab by the time we were juniors and seniors. And so that was really fun. We were a really field heavy lab, and we also were really undergraduate heavy. So the older undergraduates would train the younger undergraduates, and this that kind of like gave me a lot of opportunities to take ideas and run with them and see what worked and what didn't work, and that there's more than one way to do everything. So sometimes we would need like a simple solution, and sometimes we would need like a more creative and out of the box solution. And so it was a fun experience to be able to have the ability to take projects through each of their steps. So that was pretty neat. And WIMSE also encouraged us to present. And so we had to actually like do a mini research symposium every year for WIMSE to kind of like show that we were doing our job in the lab and that we were producing something. And so we did poster presentations, and every year they would pick a few people to do talks. And that was really fun. And I think that also helped me to get excited about what the other side of the science process is, in like sharing work and attending conferences and being able to have conversations with people that might not do exactly what you do about what you're studying. So I think that was also a big part of it for me, was the emphasis on presentation and conferences, which was a really cool experience to get to have as an undergrad, and was definitely something that was really heavily facilitated by WIMSE.
That is such an important experience, and I definitely agree that you know, getting to be able to work a project from start to finish is just like so important within the process of science. I work with a group of seniors in high school every year. They've had a minimum of like 6 science classes. And in this class, they actually make their own research question and then answer it throughout the year. And it's really difficult for them. You know, it's something that I think as professional scientists, when we've done it for a while, we kind of take for granted. They're like, oh yeah, this is how you do it. But it's not something that anyone is ever taught. And especially through high school and even through undergrad often, you know, it's really almost, many people aren't even exposed to it until they get to graduate school. So to have that kind of experience throughout all of your undergrad career, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I was really lucky in that aspect. And I also definitely didn't succeed at that right away. We definitely would have some trial and error involved in.
No, of course not. I mean, that's the whole point of doing science, right? It's so good to be able to make those mistakes and, you know, and continue to try over and over.
Yeah, for sure. And it was fun to be able to have some ownership of the projects, but also some freedom to like learn from older students. And my lab mate, Katie, really taught me a lot of things during that time. And then we ended up getting to run some projects together. So that was really fun to get to have some collaboration.
And then you decided to pursue a PhD directly out of undergrad. I feel like that's a little bit rare in our field. Can you tell me a little bit more about that decision?
I think it was a really personal, like multifaceted thing. There was a lot of different reasons that I made that decision. When I was at Florida State, there were some graduate students in our department who were really encouraging about pursuing a graduate degree when I was working in the Sponge Lab. And their encouragement helped me decide that I wanted to pursue some type of graduate school right away. And I also knew from like being a volunteer high school counselor at OCG and getting to interact with graduate students that way, that grad school was something that I wanted to do. But when I started looking at graduate labs and ended up interviewing with my current advisor, Dr. Ainsworth here at USF, I knew I wanted a PhD eventually, and he encouraged me to take it on from the start if that's what I knew I wanted to do. And so I think that's not advice for everyone, but I was really excited about graduate school, and I'd been working in a lab for 4 years, so I was pretty sold on the idea that I wanted to do research as a career before I graduated Florida State. Dr. Ainsworth and I also had some ideas about projects that would have taken a lot longer than a master's would allow for me to do. And honestly, I think it was overall just like my excitement about finally getting to do research full time that made me choose that I wanted to do it right away. Our graduate program at USF has a lot of coursework. And so doing a master's would have meant that I spent a lot of the total time here taking courses. And I really wanted to have a lot of time to explore my research question. And so I think it was kind of like a whole bunch of different things. And I ended up just kind of making that decision during the application process and going with it.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that with your extensive research background during undergrad, you know, I think you probably got a lot of the experience that a lot of people would get during a master's program. You know, we talked about how in a lot of cases, people aren't even exposed to the entire process of science and research until they get to graduate school. So having those 4 years, that totally makes sense that you were completely ready to pursue a PhD right out of the box. Did you consider moving anyplace else besides back to St. Petersburg?
A little bit. So I actually like knew I wanted to go to USF before I knew where I wanted to go for undergrad, because I've been so involved with OCG and just like the already around the CMS community a lot that I was like, ooh, I want to be part of this someday, but it's a graduate school. So right. It was definitely on my radar and something that I wanted. But then when I actually started looking at grad schools, I thought, okay, well, I can't just like take my teenage self's word for it that this would be the best option. So I started looking around at other schools and I just kept coming back to it and thinking, no, I really want to go there. And so that's kind of what happened. And I ended up visiting during one of the spring breaks when I was in undergrad and meeting my advisor. So we started kind of talking about classes and I started to get more excited about it. And then that kind of went from there.
What made you decide to move from a field heavy research environment with sponges into ecosystem modeling, which is basically no field work whatsoever.
Yeah, that was an interesting flip. But when I was a junior at Florida State, I did an internship through the NOAA Hollings program, working at a nymph lab in the Northeast staging larval sturgeon. And so I was looking at larval fish, and a big focus of that was on how different physical and environmental factors were impacting them. And that was also what my undergraduate sponge research was about. My undergrad thesis was about how sponges regenerate in environments with different amounts of food available. And so both of those projects focused on individual responses to stress or to environmental factors. And so I started thinking about the big picture, like how would these responses from individuals be translating up to an impact at a population or community level? Like, what does this small zoomed in picture mean for the big picture? And I also kind of got the idea that I wanted to switch when I was doing the work in the field and in the lab. And I noticed that even though I thought the field work and lab work was really fun, I had way more fun once we got the data back and I got to start analyzing it. And so that ended up being like the piece that excited me. So I always felt kind of like something was missing until we got the data, and then I would get more excited. And so I ended up thinking, okay, I think maybe I belong on the analysis side of this. I also was interested in how the bigger picture played out, because I felt like I was looking at such a zoomed in piece of it, which was really important. But I always wondered, like, how is this impacting other things in the reef or other things in our area? And so when I did the larval project at NOAA, it had a lot more direct policy applications. And so I kind of knew I wanted to go in that direction and maybe mm-hmm. explore fisheries a little bit. But it was once I started like getting the data back for my sponge work in my personal undergrad thesis that I started thinking like, oh, this is really fun. Like I like looking at what this data can tell me and whether or not it answered my question and how it opens up even more questions now that I have the answer to that question. And so I ended up having a lot more fun on the processing side of things. And I also have to credit fish banks a little bit for that interest in fisheries, that game that we played at OCG, because it kind of emphasizes that idea that there's always like a bigger story going on. And so I ended up meeting my current advisor at a visit during spring break, and I told him about my interests. And at that time I was still doing really field heavy stuff, but he recommended that I start taking some programming and stats classes. So by the time I actually decided that I wanted to switch into modeling, I had a lot of statistics and program experience, so I knew it was like maybe like physically doable, but I was still really intimidated because the jump from doing mostly field and lab work to full-time computer modeling was such a different thing than what I had pictured myself doing. But it turned out to be really fun for me personally, and I have to credit Fish Banks board game a little bit for that. But also my curiosity at how these like very individual centric projects were scaling up, and I just couldn't let go of that idea when I was doing them. And so I thought, well, maybe I need to be doing not individual centric work then.
I definitely identify with that idea of that it's science that's super applied. I mean, I didn't really learn anything about fisheries until I did my master's degree, what the applications were and why it was important and that stuff. And that for me too, it was just like, this is the piece that I'm looking for. Is like, I love doing science, but I want it to mean something and I want it to be applicable to something. And I want somebody to be able to use the information that I'm collecting like right away. And I think that is one of the things that's really exciting about doing fisheries research.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that's one of the things that makes me excited to do work every day.
We've talked a little bit kind of around your dissertation, and can you tell me just briefly a little bit more about what your dissertation work was?
Yeah. So my dissertation work explores the role of larvae, which are young, or you could call them baby fish, in ecosystems, and how their dispersal or how they're moving around in whatever environment you're in impacts the distribution of production and fisheries in those areas. And so my dissertation kind of looks at a piece of the puzzle that has to do with vertical migration, which means how the young fish are moving up and down in the water column. And predicting vertical position of larvae is important because different currents happen at different depths. And so I wanted to build a dispersal model, but in order to figure out what currents to use, I had to figure out what depth the larvae were at. And so that was the main part of my work and how, like, the question I was trying to answer. And I'm working in the Gulf of Mexico. And so after we had that answer, I built a dispersal model to figure out where the larvae were spawning and settling. And then we put the results from that into an ecosystem model so that we could look at how those larval dynamics were playing out to impact production in the Gulf of Mexico. So the main, like, part of the question that my dissertation tackles is the depth question. What depth are they traveling at? And then we can use that to see where they're going.
And the data you were using was the CMAP ichthyoplankton survey data?
Yes. So there were two main data sets. So there was the CMAP ichthyoplankton survey data, which is taken in a type of net that has depth bins, so you know what depth the samples came from. And then the current data came from the West Florida Coastal Ocean Model, which is hosted by the Ocean Circulation Group at USF. And so that's where the physics data came from for the dispersal side. And then the larval data came from the CMAP ichthyoplankton surveys as well. And
the CMAP ichthyoplankton survey is a project that's been going on for at least a few decades.
Very
and
long.
So they go out, they do one giant survey every summer of different areas of the Gulf of Mexico, and they use this net called a mock NESS. What does that stand for? Multiple opening closing
net with environmental sensing system.
So there's all these like crazy nets all like stacked up on top of each other, and then they open for a little while and then they close, and then each one of the nets has fish from different or plankton from different levels in the water column. And then somebody at some other poor soul at some other lab has to pick through that entire sample and identify all of the larval fish in there. And so then you know what the species was, when it was caught, and what depth it was caught at.
Yes.
So,
and so that's what we ended up getting. But the cool part is they also have environmental data to go with it because there's sensors on the net, as well as they can drop sensors off the vessel. And so we were able to get a lot of really good information about what the environmental variables were doing at the time that the fish were caught. And so that was something that I used in my work. And I
put the fish together with the environment and then used a physical circulation ocean model to look at where those teeny tiny larvae are being swept throughout the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes, exactly. So it's a lot of different pieces that kind of all come together to make this happen.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. It's so interdisciplinary. And I think that is, you know, where we all need to be heading.
It's been fun. I really like getting to look at that and being able to have collaborations and also being able to kind of see that the story has a lot of moving parts, which I think has been a theme for me.
Yeah, I think it's a theme of this conversation.
Yeah.
So many different moving parts, so many different things to think about all at the same time.
Yeah, and you can't think about everything, but you can definitely make decisions about which pieces are going to be part of the story that you're looking at. And so that's also an interesting thing, is to look at, okay, what matters and what doesn't matter, and how do I decide that? And it's complicated, but it's fun.
Do you have a favorite part to your dissertation?
I think I'm the most proud of the custom Lagrangian dispersal model that I built for my last chapter. So the physical ocean circulation model.
Okay, so first of all, I always forget which one a Lagrangian model is.
So you're tracking particles and where they're going.
So, okay. Yeah. There's like the two different kinds, and I'm always like, okay, one of them is standing still and one of them is moving with
right,
the particles.
Yeah. So we're going with the particles to figure out where they're going. And so I think I'm most proud of that because, so the currents come from the West Florida Coastal Ocean Model, and we got archived outputs of all the different current directions for the years that our samples from the CMAP survey happened, and then I did that model that predicts what depth they're at, so we know where to draw the currents from. But then I had to build the part that would move them through time forwards and backwards, and I think that's what I'm personally most proud of, because it was a pretty big programming project. And I think when I started grad school, like coming out of doing full-time field work and like switching into modeling, I was really intimidated, like, am I going to be able to do meaningful things? And so being able to take on like a huge programming project as part of my dissertation was, I think, really fun for me. And I'm really proud of that. And like, I've decided that this is the part of science that I want to be in. And so I think that was exciting for me. And it was cool to see that happening. And it was a big personal accomplishment, but also it kind of proved to me that I could do it, that I could be part of this modeling side of things. I don't know if I would have thought I could do anything like this when I started grad school. But I think at the beginning, if you had told me, like, this is what you're going to do for your ending, like, piece of the puzzle, I would have been like, no, probably that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, fair. I guess I probably, when I started my PhD, I didn't think that I was going to be able to peel apart eye lenses because I hate using microscopes. But I spent multiple years doing it. Yeah. So what do you think is one of your favorite memories from your career so far?
Well, I personally have had some great moments figuring out programming bugs and jumping around excited in my office, but those don't make for really great, like, oh my gosh, stories. So I'll tell you a story from when I had a really weird field moment that is always one of my go-to stories. And so I was working on my undergraduate thesis, which was on sponges, and I was pretty good at identifying sponges in the field because by the time I was in the fourth year, we'd been going out a lot. And so I could kind of pick out at least like what family maybe the sponge was in. And then sponges actually have a really cool thing called spicules, which are these little silica shapes that make up their skeleton, and you can identify a sponge down to the species based on the different shapes and sizes of their spicules. So we would take samples from the field and bring them back to the lab and look at their spicules. And that was actually something my co-worker Katie was really good at, the spicule identification. And so I was swimming, snorkeling, and I was measuring some sponges, and we were taking some samples from one of our field sites. It was actually a new field site. This was the first time we'd been there. It was in the Florida Keys, and I was looking at this clump of sponges, and I could identify like the basics of all of them except one, which was very smooth, like smoother than I was used to seeing, and it was brownish gray, and it had spots on it. And I thought, that is a weird looking sponge. Like, I have never seen a sponge like that. So I was excited because I was like, oh, we found one we haven't seen in this area before. And so I was going to take a sample of it. And I reached out to hold the sponge so that I can take a sample. And the sponge looks at me, which sponges don't have eyes. So that was my first clue. And it starts to get up out of the pile and swim away. And it was a shark. It was a nurse shark hiding underneath this pile of sponges. And so I almost grabbed a shark. And I always start those Never Have I Ever icebreaker games with my story about how I almost grabbed a shark by accident, because even in marine circles, most people that handle sharks do it on purpose. So
right. Yeah.
So I just remembered that was a moment where I was so focused on like the task I was doing that I missed the big picture, that I was like about to grab an actual shark. I think my favorite memories personally of my career are just like the moment you figure something out that you didn't think you were going to be able to figure out. So like you fix a bug, or you find a new way to do something you hadn't thought you could solve that problem. And so just those moments of being like, oh, we could do it this way, are always my favorite, but maybe my most funny stories are from the field.
I mean, at least nurse sharks are sweet.
Yes, he was very nice about it, very understanding, you know, gave me some deserved side eye and swam away.
Many years ago, when I was doing outdoor ed on the West Coast, there were horn sharks there. There's a few other kinds, but there were horn sharks, and you could basically just like pick up a baby horn shark.
Oh my gosh.
So I had a whole snorkel group, and I picked up this baby horn shark and I brought it up for everybody to see and like pet and everything. We were all snorkeling, so we're just like bobbing in the water. And I was talking to this group of kids, and all of a sudden I look over, and the horn shark, they have mouths kind of like nurse sharks, where they're just kind of like gummy. They don't have big teeth or anything like that. This horn shark had latched onto this kid's arm next to me.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oops, sorry. Well, you can tell your friends you got bit by a shark once. So you are just about done with your PhD and you're moving on to your next adventure, which is going to be on the West Coast of the United States. We're on the West Coast of Florida, so you're moving to a different West Coast.
Yes. West Coast, best coast, West Coast of Florida, West Coast of the U.S. You just, you know, you got to stay consistent.
Right.
Yeah, I'm moving to Santa Cruz for a postdoc on salmon ecosystem modeling. And I'm excited because I haven't spent very much time on the West Coast of the U.S. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Nice. Have you visited Santa Cruz yet?
I have not, because of our pandemic world situation. All of the interviews have been virtual, and I've been doing like city tours on my computer, and so I've visited through Zoom, but not in real life.
Okay.
So it's gonna be, I'm gonna move there cold, so it'll be interesting. I've always been a Florida girl, so the idea of it is kind of a little intimidating, but also like it's gonna be a new adventure.
Absolutely. What do you think you're looking forward to most with this new challenge?
I think two things. I think it'll be cool to be part of a fishery that I don't know, that I haven't worked in, so I can use my skills to attack a different problem. So I think that'll be fun. It is an ecosystem modeling project, and it does have a dispersal component, so those are things that I already work on, but it also has some deeper look at predator and prey interactions. So I'm excited about that because that's not something I did in my dissertation work. And so it'll be some new stuff and some old stuff, but I'm excited also to kind of be involved in a new ecosystem. So the skills that I bring to ecosystem modeling are the same, but the system that I'm using them in will be different. So I'm excited about that. Salmon fishing is something that's bigger on the West Coast than on the East Coast of the US. So it'll be a whole new world.
Salmon fishing is very big on the West Coast, and salmon money is very big on the West Coast. But I was actually just thinking about salmon larvae, and salmon are larvae and juveniles in relatively shallow rivers. So in terms of like larval dispersal, it's going to be a very different environment.
It is. It's going to be a really different story that we're looking at, and also just it'll be new. It'll be new for me. And I'm excited because I like new things. So like, I like to look at new spaces, questions that like, I don't know. I think it'll be fun.
Now the tough part of the interview is over and it's down to my final questions. So we always start off really simple with, what is your favorite fish?
Okay. So maybe this is out of left field because I don't work on them and they're not really part of my personal research, but I love mullet. I find their faces extremely endearing. And I really like that they jump out of the water. They just seem to have a fun life.
That's amazing.
I just find mullet like very cute fish. And so I love mullet. I get so excited anytime I'm on the water somewhere and they start jumping or we see them swimming and I'm like, it's mullet. I think everyone knows that my favorite invertebrate is the octopus. I'm pretty obsessed with octopi or octopuses, depending on which root word you want to use. Mm-hmm. But that's like something that people always give me as gifts. So I have accumulated a quite large collection of octopus trinkets, jewelry, edible cookies with octopuses on them. I have a very octopus themed apartment, but my favorite fish is definitely mullet.
Nice. Have you watched My Octopus Teacher yet?
I have not watched it yet, but I'm very
excited.
It's
so good.
For when I turn in my last set of forms.
It's also really relaxing, so I don't know. You maybe should just watch it right away.
Maybe watch it now to end of project nerves.
Yeah. What is your dream job or location?
I don't think I really have a dream location, but I really would like to work at NOAA, which is the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. The postdoc that I'm doing is a joint project between University of California, Santa Cruz, and NOAA. But that's something that I really like to do. I want to be in government is my dream job, and something in fisheries. And I think that if you had asked me this when I was an undergrad, I would have said like, oh, I want to work in a tropical location and all of those things. But I think that I've seen that every time I've pivoted, I've had just as much fun in the thing that I pivoted to. So I don't think I really have a dream job, except that I would like to be in government doing some type of modeling.
I really hope that going forward, we can continue to have good and impartial government science going on. To be completely frank, like that's been one of my biggest challenges working for the state is just like wondering whether or not, you know, our good faith efforts are getting put into things in an unbiased way. And, you know, so far they mostly have been, but it's always kind of nerve-wracking. And I have hated to see the federal government going in that direction recently. And I hope that it gets turned around.
Yeah, I'm excited to work on a joint project. And I hope that that's a career path for me in the future.
And our final question, if there was one point or principle you would have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
I think that the problem is almost certainly more complicated than you think it is, but the solution might be less complicated than you think it is. I just feel like a theme of my personal like research journey has been like, oh, there's a bigger picture, but wait, there's an even bigger picture than that. And then, oh, there's a bigger picture than that. But you don't always have to overcomplicate the solution. So I think that that's kind of...
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. And I really appreciated chatting with you. It was so much fun. If people wanted to connect with you online or learn more about your work, is there any place that they can find you?
I don't have a personal website right now, but if somebody wants to reach out, you can email me at kmvassbinder@usf.edu. So that's probably the best way to reach me right now.
Thank you to everyone for listening to this 91st episode of the Fisheries Podcast. We're closing in on 100.
Hooray!
If you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter at FishVecchio. The podcast is at Fisheries Pod on Twitter and on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast or old-fashioned email feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget to head on over to our Patreon page or Teespring store to support the podcast if you feel inclined. I'm Julie Vecchio. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, the problem may be more complicated than you think, but the solution might be more simple. Hooray!